Hi, I'm Gilbert Gottfried. I'm here with my co-host Frank Santopadre, and we're once again recording at Nutmeg with our engineer Frank Verderosa, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions.
Colossal Obsessions.
It is. And we were having so much fun with our guest, Mark Malkoff, last week, talking about the 25th anniversary of Johnny Carson leaving the airwaves. Can you believe?
I can't believe
25 it. 25 years, May 22nd, 1992.
I was in Hershey, Pennsylvania on that Friday night watching it. I remember it very vividly.
Were you watching it, Gil? When Johnny went off the air?
Yeah it was sad. Bette Midler.
No, that was penultimate. That was the next to last.
And that is an interesting point that you bring that up, because Johnny and Peter LaSalle wanted that episode to be the last one. They, for people listening, I don't know if you know this or not, but they do a post-mortem after most late night shows where you'll have the host, the producers and the director, and they kind of talk about the show. There's anything that needs to be edited in post, which
they do it in daytime too.
Yes, yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. So they did the after the Bette Midler Robin Williams, which was just incredible television. I mean, just spontaneously, Bette Midler and Johnny singing "Here's That Rainy Day" together a cappella with, I think Ed Shaughnessy told Bette in the dressing room that was Johnny's favorite song, and it was just this amazing Mark Shaman doing. One for my baby. And then Bette Midler apparently backstage just afterwards puts the lay over Johnny's head and runs off sobbing backstage. And at the postmortem, Peter and Johnny said, this should be our last episode. We don't want to do another episode.
They couldn't top it.
They couldn't. I mean, the last episode had no guests. Of course, NBC probably wanted to make this primetime gigantic thing.
Of course.
And Johnny, the classy man he wanted, just wanted to go out very quietly. And it was the guest montage where they had, I think, 55 people set to Memories of You with Doc and the orchestra underneath. And then it was the first time ever that they showed behind the scenes. And I asked Jeff Sotzig of Carson Entertainment, how did Johnny take that with cameras following him around? That had never happened. I said, was that hard for Johnny? He said, oh, absolutely. It took him a long time to kind of get used to that. Dave Letterman did the similar thing on the last episode where they finally showed after 30 years kind of how they put the show together. But yeah. I liked the final episode. It was classy.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wanted what the audience really wanted was Johnny.
Oh, absolutely.
They didn't even need guests. And they just wanted that one-on-one relationship.
Really,
they wanted to say goodbye.
It's true. And then it was very strange for the staff, because it was the first time that the staff had been in the audience, most of them. And you had David Steinberg was in the audience. Bill Zamy was in the audience. And you had all these Johnny's two sons and his wife, Alex. But to have his writers and the Tonight Show staff in front of him in those 400-plus seats in Burbank, and for him to say goodbye to America, and then he went straight to the elephant doors where a limousine waited to pick him up, him and his wife, Alex, up. And then the limousine went not too far to the helicopter pad, and then the helicopter whisked them away to Malibu, where they had a rap party with all and Les Brown Orchestra. And it was the first time, obviously, that most people had ever been to Johnny's estate in Malibu, and that's how everything ended.
Can you imagine psychologically what was going through his head when he just wrapped it for the last time? After,
yeah.
I mean, the sense.
What was it, 25 years?
No.
It was 29 and 6 or 7 months. And apparently, I mean, Rick Ludwin, who was vice president of late night, told me he went to, he thought that somebody from NBC should say thank you, and went down to Johnny's basement office. And Johnny apparently that day was just jotting down what he was going to say on a legal pad. Fritz Coleman told me that he wanted on the last day just to say thank you for everything that you mean to me. And, he was just, I think Carson said it was strange, but it was just, another day. And I think that he just wanted to go out on top.
Of course.
The thing that really bothered him was he did not want to become Bob Hope, and those Saturday Night Live sketches.
Us before we turned the mics on. The Carcinio sketches bothered?
That one didn't bother him. Robert Smigel penned these sketches, and, NBC didn't really want SNL to do it, but Lorne Michaels, to his credit, gives his writers creative freedom, and I guess Robert Smigel perceived Johnny as being maybe out of touch and would write these sketches. And I actually just watched this episode of Dana Carvey on with Johnny, and it was one of the rare moments where Carvey did his Johnny impersonation for Johnny, and it was just, you could tell Johnny, he was trying to be a good sport about it, but it was hard to watch. And apparently Dana Carvey said that Jay Leno told him right before he announced his retirement, Johnny was in the halls of Burbank and said, if they're going to make fun of me, I'm out of here. And that was, I think, right before the Carnegie Hall where he announced his retirement. But he just did not want to be perceived as Bob Hope. And those sketches
really— hanging on too long.
Yeah, and the sketches bothered him. That one, the Carcinio one,
He always had a contentious relationship with Saturday Night Live.
It was.
Ever since they knocked the Saturday reruns off the
air. Yeah, the Chevy Chase, Chevy Chase New York Magazine piece saying that he would be maybe the rain. And he definitely had a huge problem with SNL. And I think that last year, when he started having problems with the show, the booking stopped for Dana Carvey. I don't think Victoria Jackson did the show after that. And he, his final week, he took a shot at Saturday Night Live and the monologue. They did a cold open. I think Woody Harrelson, Vanessa Williams season finale of 90, would have been 92. And they did a cold open that Smigel wrote. And it was, Phil Hartman being drunk for the finale. And it really got to him, and he took a pot shot. I said the monologue was, this was the final week or two of the show. He said, and NBC programming, next year they're actually going to make a comedy version of Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
That was his joke. He said, and then he said something about striking back or something,
Are you old enough to remember that before SNL debuted in 75, that slot was a Carson rerun on Saturday night?
I know that that's why Ebersol and Lorne Michaels, that's why Johnny wanted something to replace it. But that's amazing to think about.
Yeah.
Johnny just thought that it was too much of the Tonight Show. And that's what,
It was one of the few nights I got to watch Johnny Carson because I didn't have to get up and go to school.
Yes.
It's like Carson, he made a few there was the famous ad lib about Chevy Chase saying he couldn't ad lib a fart.
That was the cast. Johnny watched Good Nights, and they had a minute or two to kill. But he said that about the cast. But he definitely was ticked about that Chevy Chase New York Magazine story, which is not Chevy's fault. And they became friendly with the card game years later.
Yeah.
But oh my gosh, there's this episode. It's really hard to watch with Gallagher and Chevy Chase and Chevy on
Carson.
You sure
it's not Gallagher too?
And Chevy. Chevy takes a shot at Gallagher. Gallagher tells a joke on panel, and it doesn't go well. And Chevy gets a dig in, and then the rest of the episode is throughout the episode is Gallagher taking shots at Chevy, and the audience really loving this. And Johnny, it just cuts to Johnny, and he's loving this. I definitely think that with some of the SNLers, he would have them on occasionally, but he was just loving Chevy getting beaten up verbally by Gallagher.
Tell us about putting the show together. Tell us about booking the show. And because for people that aren't familiar with the podcast, and again, we'll plug it because it's great, the Carson Podcast, you have a lot of behind-the-scenes people, too. You've mentioned Rick Ludwin. You've mentioned some of the other people that we talked about, Bob Shane. But you've had other people on the show.
Peter LaSalle, who the New York Times calls, I think, the host whisperer, was Arthur Godfrey's producer.
Right, and became Dave's go-to guy.
Yeah, he was Dave's EP. He was Tom Snyder's EP. He was Johnny's EP. Peter was somebody I really wanted on. I got a message to him within, I think, a half hour. I got a call from CBS Television City, and his charming assistant, Chris, had Peter's hold for Peter, and Peter... I basically said, I know you don't do interviews almost ever, and I know you hate them, but you do not know how much this would mean to me. And the reason he said that he would do it is because of my email, and he's like, it was genuine. I said, I know it was, and I went to Television City, CBS, where they did Jack Benny, and Price is Right and Bill Maher.
Bill Maher's still there,
But they're all in the family. It's so historic.
Oh, sure.
And I went to Peter's office, and it was amazing talking to him. I don't know if you guys know his background. Holocaust survivor. He knew Anne Frank.
I don't know. Yeah, that's really fascinating.
He's a remarkable man. He was an NBC page, and then he worked for Godfrey. And
your favorite, Gil?
Oh yes,
Arthur Godfrey.
Godfrey was a major anti-Semite.
That is what who I just read that Shelley Schultz. Shelley Schultz is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think as a manager. And he worked on The Tonight Show. He was the one that booked Cosby and Joan Rivers. And he apparently, I just saw an interview with him, and he said the same thing that you just said. And I have no idea if that's true or not.
Yeah.
I know that Peter had a good experience, but at the same time, Peter told me the same thing about Johnny, is that Peter was given the advice, if Arthur invites you to go to his farmhouse on the weekend or wherever his retreat is, say no. Just say no. And he always would, because if they get to spend time with you, they might get to not like you. And apparently Bob Shanks said the same thing to Cavett about Jack Parr. Don't go away with them.
So keep that professional distance from, from these
apparently
guys.
So.
I tried to do that with Gilbert.
Yeah. But, you know, getting to
it
Godfrey.
Hasn't worked.
Peter LaSalle was telling me, and I've done research, Godfrey was over with the American public more than Oprah. I mean, I don't think people can imagine that, have the,
oh, yeah.
the captures.
Oh, he was
that,
beloved.
I mean, is there anybody on television now, any figure that is that has that pull?
And there was one thing, and I remember I took sides with the other guy in this because I thought he was a performer.
I know who you're going to say.
Okay.
Julius LaRosa.
No, no, no.
That's not
no.
what you're going to say? I thought that's what you were going to say.
This was an incident when Uri Geller.
Oh, that's what we're saying. Oh, I thought we were still talking about.
On The Tonight Show.
Yeah. And he was like, you know, read minds.
Ben Spoons.
Yeah. And he was sabotaged by Johnny Carson.
I think, in my opinion, I haven't talked to Uri Geller. I'd like to. I talked to James Randi, the amazing Randi, who went on with Johnny a lot, was friends with Randi. The Johnny Carson Foundation, I think, still contributes financially to support Randi, who is a skeptic. He basically told Johnny, he took him through the entire appearance. He said, do not let them use their own spoons. Don't let them use their own equipment. Have somebody watching all the equipment the entire time. Do not let them use any of their own equipment. And Uri Geller on television just couldn't perform. And I know Uri Geller says, in his defense, he says that, you had this person that didn't believe. There's a lot of negativity in the room. And I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said that you can't always pull that off. But it was a very uncomfortable. I think they did two segments.
Why would Johnny sabotage another magician? He was a magician himself.
Yeah. I don't think he thought he was a magician. Uri Geller really claimed that he could bend spoons.
I see.
He could do all these things.
So Johnny was trying to
debunk. I think Johnny didn't believe it. I mean, Johnny was upset. Johnny in retirement would watch Larry King and loved Sylvia Brown, the psychic, because he's like, I can't believe people believe this. He would like Robert Tilton. Carson really, really shared Randy's belief on that stuff on the psychics. So yeah, the Uri Geller thing was I know that was a disastrous appearance, but I mean I think it couldn't have helped that I think Carson was very polite, but you could tell the tone that he there was definitely, it was not, maybe a lack of warmth, I think.
You read stories about him turning on people sometimes.
Oh, my gosh.
We're talking not only the decor of a story, which may be justified because he was in grief, and who knows if that was, that was long in coming. But Pete Barbeauty getting blacklisted from the show.
Dick Shawn got blacklisted as well.
Dick Shawn
but then
too.
They had him back. They brought Dick Shawn back a year or two before he passed.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
And now back to the show.
And I heard also Charlie Callis.
Charlie Callis got more negative mail than any. I just sat down.
It's
I
bizarre.
Sat down recently with so back on the sixth floor of NBC here in New York, on the sixth floor of what was the RCA building. They would have these women. They were only young women called correspondents, and the correspondents would answer the phones and they would answer Johnny's mail, and they would have to take the mail home because there was so much mail. And apparently what would happen is they would have to keep a log of the complaints that would come in. And Charlie Callis and Woody Allen apparently were the two people, when Woody would guest host and Charlie Callis would come on, that the phones would ring off the hook with complaints.
I don't understand that at all.
I don't know.
It's strange.
And I mean, Woody Allen, of course, great. And Charlie Callis always made me laugh.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, the person I talked to told me, the people that watched the show were middle America, and anything that was not middle America, maybe Woody Allen, just that would, that some, the section of people that just didn't want that, I guess.
A little too Semitic for the Tonight Show audience? Is that what's being suggested?
Woody guest hosting the Tonight Show was wonderful. We were talking beforehand about some of the people that guest hosted the show that I don't think most people know, like Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah, you were telling us that Bogdanovich came out and did a monologue.
He did.
Which is rather stunning.
And what is the true story to the Joan Rivers?
It's very complicated. I want to preface this. If Joan Rivers was here, I think her narrative is, I think she would deny everything that the Carson people say. And the thing that's very hard is Joan Rivers for over a decade would go on television and it seemed like so many interviews would just give her version of the what happened. And she would say it over and over again until it got in the public consciousness. And the version of the Carson camp, Johnny was, he never, I don't want to say he was too classy because Joan was very classy. I'd met her. I worked with her a little bit. She was wonderful. Johnny just, you know, his quote was, I was never upset. I just would have handled it differently. That's all. But we both all know he was upset. So here's the deal. They went to dinner. It was several, I think 3 weeks beforehand, and they were still negotiating with Joan to guest host the show, and she had signed her contract with Fox. They had no idea that she had signed the contract, and Rivers called Carson. Brandon Tartikoff had gotten to Carson right beforehand and said, and I guess Joan Rivers called DeCordova, and DeCordova said, "You're kidding me. I've been told by somebody with good knowledge that Johnny broke down and cried when he found out that Joan was going to Fox." And that itself would have been fine. Everybody said if Joan would have sat down with him, that I had this opportunity, that he would have been the first one. But the way that he perceived it to be that she did this behind his back, just I've been told he already had issues sometimes, I think, with his mom and sometimes
It's fair to say, and if you watch that American Masters doc, he had some issues with women. I'm not saying necessarily it played out here with Joan, but he had some issues.
Very healthy relationships, though, with people, with women.
Oh, I'm not suggesting
well
it.
But he definitely, I think the trust thing with him, and he felt betrayed. And the thing that was very difficult that, and again, I think if Joan Rivers was here, she would deny it. And I have no idea what happened. I really am Switzerland. I have no idea. I've talked to several people on staff that told me that Joan Rivers tried to take them to go. And Peter LaSalle went on record. And one other person went on record with me. And one other person when we weren't wasn't recording that Joan tried to take Johnny's staff. I mean, it's one thing to compete, but to try to take the guy who made you staff. That was one thing that was definitely a thing that that bothered him, and just the negotiations that they were still negotiating. Yeah. I mean, Joan Rivers said that there was a list of 10 people, and she wasn't on the list. I've talked to everybody; there was no list, according to anyone, that ever existed. And if there was, how would she find out about it? Of 10 successors, I mean, nobody at NBC will validate this list. Nobody at the Tonight Show. Of 10 successors, there would never be a list of 10 successors, in my opinion. Maybe five, maybe three. But I don't know. I mean, apparently Joan saw Johnny at least once in public, and she sent him condolence on when his son died. I think she reached out to him when Edgar took his life, which was tragic, her husband. And I know she saw him in public at least once, I think at a restaurant, and tried to go up to him, and Johnny just wouldn't. And I've talked to Johnny's first producer, Perry Cross, said once he turned on you, that was it.
And tell us, this is off a little off that subject, but it's also about an altercation. Tell us about Paul Williams, our friend Paul Williams, and George Peppard.
You know,
Paul, there's an issue. Do you know about this skill?
This is good already.
This is something I learned from listening to the Mark Malkoff Carson podcast.
I don't think it's any secret. Paul Williams has been on both of our shows that
we love him.
He had some issues in the 70s.
Yeah, talked about it.
Yeah,
insane story.
And George Peppard, I don't think it's a secret as well, had an alcohol issue. And he, I believe, was in, it seemed to me on the videotape that he was intoxicated, and Paul Williams backed that up. And they just started, Peppard took insult on Paul Williams and then called him a midget. And Paul, it just got really tense. And Paul Williams said, "Do not call me a midget." And it was one of those things. Now I think they would probably edit this stuff out. But I mean, everything got in, all the so-called mistakes. And it was, I think Paul Williams said when he got sober, he had a lot of empathy for George Peppard. But that stuff would happen. I mean, they had back in the green room.
Fascinating.
They had alcohol back for the green room. I mean, I think a lot of shows, like Leno, they had the alcohol for
and
the guests.
All of the game shows.
A lot of booze
they
at
used
the game
to be
shows,
blasted.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I heard they would wheel around carts of every alcoholic beverage you want. So these guests would be bombed out of their skulls.
Letterman at CBS, the guest would have to ask for it. They had it under lock and key, but if somebody asked for it, they could have it. But I think it depended on the show. But in the green room, there was alcohol. And do you know, so when you see the camera pan the audience, there's a kind of like a little doorway that's called the well. And that is leads to the green room. And the well is where a lot of comedians would watch. Like, let's say Jimmy Brogan went over for Seinfeld's first debut. A lot of the comedians would congregate in the well. And right behind that would be where the green room would be. And speaking of Brogan, I was telling you a little bit of this about the show. In the last year, I was over at former NBC Burbank, which I think is called Burbank Studios.
Yeah, tell us about
it. I was with Jimmy Brogan. Whenever I'm in Los Angeles, I try to stop by and just kind of do the pilgrimage and go into Studio One. And, you know, the seats are all still in there. All, I think, 450 seats because of, I've heard because of asbestos, they can't pull them out. And it's still, if you look out into the audience, it still has that same exact feel of Carson. And if you go out in the middle of the hallway between Studio One and Three, the Rickles thing, when Johnny went across the hall, everything looks the same.
CPO Sharky.
The hallways look the same. And Brogan and I went to, and this I've done this before previously, we went down to Johnny's dressing room office, which is in the basement.
Jimmy Brogan, we should tell people who he is.
Oh, yeah. Brogan wrote, was Leno's monologue.
Leno's writer.
Writer for 9 years.
And nice man.
He went on the show with Johnny a bunch of times, and he opens up for Jay normally on Sundays in Hermosa Beach. And so Johnny's office was locked, and I said, oh, this is a shame. Brogan said, Mark, follow me. And he leads me through this really narrow entrance where I was with like pipes. And I was like, where are we going? And apparently what happened, he got me into Johnny's dressing room, is that they had built for Carson an escape door.
What, like he's Dick Cheney? Yeah, they have a bunker?
Because fans, crazy fans, would get into NBC Burbank. And more than once, a deranged fan had gotten into the show. And
wild.
If there was ever anybody that got into his dressing room, he would have an escape door to get out. Yeah,
nuts.
And but we got it.
Also, I mean, Jerry Lewis used to
he guest hosted a lot. Yeah,
and now when Jerry Lewis got his own talk show, it bombed. And yet, when Jerry Lewis would be the guest host on Carson, they said those would do great.
I'll tell you why. Then this is the insight I've gotten. First of all, when he would do the Tonight Show, it was 90 minutes. His talk show, variety show, was, I think, 2 hours.
2 hours.
A little longer.
Yeah.
And I heard Lewis had too much going on at the time. I mean, because Lewis could do a week, and then he would take sometimes a month or two off before he would guest host. But it was just, I heard he had too much going on with his film career and just couldn't get the proper attention to the show. But I mean, did you hear that story about like they would have to put like JL tiles?
Yes, we talked about it with Tom Sharpling.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. It's incredible.
It's wild. Tell us, you were telling us too before we turned the mics on that you found some of the people that you've interviewed to be very protective of Johnny's legacy, like Joan Embry.
It's
the great Joan Embry.
Really true. I tried to get her and I couldn't. I wasn't able to get her until I think somebody emailed me. She was promoting Johnny Carson
the
DVDs.
San Diego Zoo.
Yes.
Joan Embry.
I went to New Canaan, Connecticut to sit down with Jim Fowler. He was going
like
on
too.
Back in the, he was doing the animals stuff back in the 60s. In the 60s, unknown Barbara Streisand asked him afterwards, can you come to my apartment and look at my parakeet? Streisand in the 60s, early from 62 to like 66 did the show a lot.
You thought that was your line.
I know.
Yes.
But she's very protective. There are a bunch of people that have never talked publicly about Carson until they sat down with me. And I think a lot of it has been, it's been a while since Carson passed. I think the documentary
they're protective
happened.
They
are. I mean, all those books were always all negative. I mean,
the one guy who I mean, this sounded like a really kind of sleazy, and that was the best known as the bombastic
Bushkin. Oh, Henry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was his lawyer and confidant.
That's true. That was his lawyer.
And then after Carson dies, he does like a tell-all book.
Listen, it went to number one on Amazon. I mean,
I noticed you didn't have him on. And there's a guy that knew Johnny.
Somebody gave me his book. I read it. Somebody with knowledge said that they're pretty sure almost all of it, if not all of it's true. I just can't separate the fact that he was a lawyer talking about his client. That's just me personally. Yeah. So I haven't sat down with him. Perhaps that will change. Listen, I want to get Wayne Newton on. I've tried to get Melissa Rivers. Paul Rodriguez, I've reached out. I'm trying to sit down with people that did not have good experiences, and I haven't been able to sit down with them.
I don't think Jamie Farr had a very good experience.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think, yeah.
Well, okay, I'd love to sit down with them.
Check
into
that.
But I tried to
sit
down
with— Hope I'm not telling tales out of school.
Oh, listen, some of the bad experiences?
Wayne Newton showed up to NBC Burbank, got past security, got into Johnny's office.
Oh, that's famous.
If you're going to—
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so— I mean, that was one. I know Paul Rodriguez said apparently on he was on panel, and then the next actress came out, and apparently Rodriguez made a joke during it in a commercial. Johnny just turned on him and swore at him, and that he was finished. Obviously Melissa Rivers with her mom. I'm trying to think who else had bad experiences.
You know, there was a Jamie Farr?
I think so. Yeah, it's in Jamie's book. I'll let Mark get his hands on that story himself.
Yeah, I'd love to sit down
I
with
have
them.
My own bombastic Bushkin story, too, which I will not tell here, but I'll tell you guys.
Love to
I'll
hear
tell,
it.
I'll tell you guys.
Love to hear it.
Something I was approached about. The show is great.
Oh, thanks.
The show is great. I mean, you get inside the inner workings of that show. You interview the staffers. You even interviewed, what's the gentleman's name? Irving Davis?
Irving Davis.
The guy that used to pull the curtain.
20 years.
The curtain.
He would open,
curtain man.
He would open the curtain for Johnny, and he would open the curtain for guests and people like Gregory Peck, these really nervous people that didn't normally do TV. So it was challenging.
And there was an incident. They show this a lot. I mean, everyone always talked about Carson and McMahon's drinking. And there was that one show where, you know, McMahon was obviously shit-faced and Carson was just kept ragging on him. And on the air, like
is that when they're about to introduce Joan Embry? I think Carson
and so.
It's the one time. Listen, Ed's character was that he was this big drunk, and it was just not true. But that clip that you're talking, it was one of the rare times that Ed was definitely visibly intoxicated on the show. But I mean, listen, Johnny was a professional. He demanded perfection. He was. And unless you heard from him, things were going well. If you heard from him, normally it was a problem. But I mean, there's no way that Ed and him started out as friends. They would go out almost every single night after the show in the New York days early on. They would go to Danny's Hideaway. They'd go to Sardi's East. They were inseparable. And like a lot of relationships, things started to change. I mean, Ed would go down to Johnny's dressing room before the show up until the last show, and they would have dinner once a year, whereas Doc and Johnny would go on vacation together. So, I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, they survived 29-plus years, almost 30 years together.
Oh, yeah.
But their dynamic definitely
changed. Well,
you
watch those Karnak sketches, and I watched a bunch today prepping for you, and their timing.
Oh, my gosh.
They're an underrated comedy team.
Oh, yeah.
Sis Boom Ba, the Kevin McCollum joke.
Yeah.
Kevin McCollum.
The sound of a sheep exploding?
Yeah. Sis Boom Ba.
Sis Boom Ba.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
They
had wonderful timing. They had wonderful chemistry. Has anyone heard from Doc, by the way?
Doc is 90 years old. He's in Tennessee. I have his cell phone number. I've talked to him thrice on the phone, and he does not know what a podcast is, apparently.
I'm having that problem booking this show with a couple of people
I won't mention. Not giving up hope, but I have to say, Doc was really funny. When he would sit in Ed's chair,
so
when Ed
Newsom
wasn't there.
So was Tommy Newsom funny.
Newsom was really good, too. I mean, I think that they really lucked out in terms of the personalities on that show.
There was nothing like it. It was a special time. Not only a great talk show, but it was that time in show business history. It was the right show for the right time.
It was. And you had these amazing people like Dave Letterman and Shanling guest hosting that show. I mean,
And George Carlin.
George Carlin was amazing.
And everybody.
And I want to say Johnny was secure enough with himself as a performer to have guest host, whereas unless Jimmy Kimmel had to take some time off recently, or Dave Letterman had his heart issues. It never happens. I mean, Jay Leno only gave up his seat once. To who? Katie Couric.
Right.
That was it. Brandon Tartikoff tried to get him to do Fridays to Rosie O'Donnell, and he just wouldn't do it. And that's Jay's prerogative. That's every host. It's their show.
Mark, the show is great. The Carson podcast, I'm going to recommend a couple of episodes I listen to. I love the Fred Silverman one. Now, there's a guy we got to get on this show.
Oh, my
Fred Silverman. So we're going to hit Mark up.
And he was the producer of Thick of the Night.
Oh, my God. So. You guys can do an hour. And you
maybe
had
two.
Pete Barbeauty, all the old Carson staples. You had Kreskin. You had Jim Fowler and Joan Embry we talked about, Ed Ames. You got a lot of great behind-the-scenes people. David Say. Remember David Say?
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah. It's an education, and it's like this show. It's a time capsule. So where can people get it?
CarsonPodcast.com on iTunes, Carson Podcast.
Wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Exactly.
And we'll give a shout-out to Alex Brazell.
Oh, yes.
Our pal, the guru. Gil?
And this, very simply, was Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions.
And 25 years ago, we said goodbye to Johnny. So we all raise a glass. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
And so it has come to this. I am one of the lucky people in the world. I found something I always wanted to do, and I have enjoyed every single minute of it. I want to thank the gentleman who shared this stage with me for 30 years, Mr. Ed McMahon.
Mr. Doc Severinsen.
You people watching, I can only tell you that it has been an honor and a privilege to come into your homes all these years and entertain you. And I hope when I find something that I want to do and I think you will like and come back that you'll be as gracious inviting me into your home as you have been. I bid you a very heartfelt good night.